This is another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
All right, everybody's very excited because this is day two of Coachella, day two of Coachella. This is Sabrina Carpenter, I think, day two of Coachella. Right now on stage, there are furries, people dressed up as animals, very big trend. Dalmatians are all dressed up as Dalmatians on the main stage of Coachella.
Sin.
Oh.
Sin, your phone was broken, forgot to charge it. All the outfit you're wearing, I hope it's ironic.
My gosh, isn't that incredible? My gosh. Justin Bieber will be, I swear, on the stage at Coachella right now. It's all furries. Do you know what furries are? I hope not. I really do hope not. Singing with Sabrina Carpenter. These are people who are dressed up as animals, full-size animals. At the moment, they're Dalmatians and poodles, but there are furry conventions. People who dress up as animals go to conventions, and here's the part that intrigues me. They want you to take their picture. They look forward to you taking their picture. Furries. Major trend. I hope you haven't missed it. But Justin Bieber is scheduled to be there, and that's the big draw because he's going to be making his comeback. For some reason, when he went on the Ellen DeGeneres show, that didn't do it. It's hard to explain, but Ellen didn't make him cool. And who else is there? Oh, the Strokes. The Strokes will be performing there. This was the coolest band in 2004. Isn't this the sort of music you like? I've studied the demographics of Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Networks, and this seems to be the music you want. Enough of that. I don't want to make you crazy with excitement. I don't want you to get too excited. But here's why I don't think you'd have a good time at Coachella, because I want you to understand how everybody goes there. Now, this is how people with money go there. You're thinking, well, if I'm going to go to a concert, this is a huge outdoor concert in the middle of California. It's going to be 100 degrees. It's in the desert. Coachella, it's in the desert, and here's what one of the rich kids who's going there is very excited about: seeing her house.
Okay, we have arrived at Coachella, and we're gonna do a little house tour. This is Zach.
What's up?
Wow. This is Zeke Sean.
Her name's Ellie.
Joe. This is the best part. This is the best.
It's a pool.
I'm going to be in this pool all day.
The best part
so
is a pool.
Pretty.
Yeah, I had to take it. I woke up at like 5:30.
Not a big pool.
We're staying at a house with like 15 to 20 people, guys and girls.
What did she say? What did she say? She's going to be in a house with how many people?
Okay, we have arrived at Coachella, and we're going to do a little house tour.
Study
Zach.
This.
What's up?
Wow.
Hey, what's up? Okay, so he's like a
this
cool guy.
This is ZK Sean. Joe. This is the best part. This is
Indio,
the best.
California.
I'm going to be in this pool all day. So pretty.
Yeah, I had to take it. I woke up at like 5:30 as if
we're staying at a house with like 15 to 20 people, guys and girls.
That's
it's
what she
so
said.
Much fun.
They're going to be
Zach
staying in a single house with 15
here.
Or 20 people.
It's so pretty.
15 or 20 people. That is my vision of hell. They're going to a huge concert, probably 100,000 people at that concert, in the middle of the desert, problem number one. Problem number two is getting in and leaving. The traffic jams are epic. And this is the risky part. If it rains, they're in mud. They're in sand mud in Indio, California. The stories of people getting stuck in that mud are well known. There are people who will drive there in their own car. Mistake number one. They don't take a bus. That's mistake number one. They go there in their own car, and then they get stuck in the mud as they're trying to leave Indio, California, get out of there in the heat and the mud. Then they're stuck there for a week. I imagine it reminds them of Woodstock. They think that would be cool, but I don't think it does remind them of Woodstock. Watch it. You can see it streamed on YouTube. You got to watch it for 5 minutes. You got to see Coachella for 5 minutes, because the long shot shows the crowd. This is the most polite crowd. They might as well be at a tea service. This is the most polite, quote, rock crowd imaginable. They're in cordoned off areas, like on New Year's Eve in Times Square. There are exit aisles, manicured lawns. I'm like, that's not a rock concert. They're all standing there, very polite, appreciating the Strokes, Coachella, appreciating Sabrina Carpenter. Everybody's standing. But then here's what I want you to watch. I want you to pay attention to this. Look up at the way back of the crowd, the way in the back, while everybody's frothing over the possibility of seeing Justin Bieber and the Strokes. Way in the back, you will see white structures. And you might think that those are utility tents or utility trucks, or more likely, food trucks. That's not what they are. They are platformed tents that you can rent for between $10,000 and $35,000 for the weekend. And like the Jersey Shore, where you need to book your towels 6 months ahead, you have to book those tents 6 months ahead. They're rented by one or two companies. That's it. And they come and they set it up and they electrify those tents. For what purpose? Air conditioning. Those tents are air conditioned tents. What you're seeing way in the horizon, when you see a long shot of the people at Coachella, you're seeing electrified tents. Now, who stays in those tents? Well, number one, people who have a spare $10,000 for one or two nights. You're also figure all the music executives, all the label people. I love how they call it that. The label people, the chairman of iHeart. The chairman of iHeart's in there with his buddy, John Sykes. John Sykes are back there. They're saying things like, you know, this is really going well for our company. It's really going well. Yes. Oh, God. I have to say it. My name is Walter Sterling. I hate all of this. I have been in the radio, record, music industry my whole career. I have somehow or another been blessed with never getting close to that flame. I've had the opportunity all my life of going to MTV Spring Break. I could have gone to MTV Spring Break, Panama City. Could have gone to Coachella. No, never was invited to Burning Man. Can't imagine what is the appeal of that. Can you tell me what the appeal of Burning Man is? I'm mentioning these because if you've gone to any of these, I'd be more than happy to discuss them at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. These concerts terrify me, and they've always terrified me. Coachella, Woodstock, Burning Man. Explain to me what Burning Man is supposed to be about. Again, they're standing in the middle of a desert. They're surrounded by mud, no accommodations. And then toward the end of it, there's this giant effigy of a man made out of sticks and gasoline, I suspect. They throw a match at it, lights up the sky, got to be, what, 50 feet high, 60 feet high? It burns. They're all stoned out of their minds, and everybody's very excited, and then they go home after they sit for 2 days in traffic. Explain this to me. That's not the sort of spiritual bonding that I want to experience. I've always been afraid of it. When I was a kid, there were a lot of payola scandals. And I was impressed early on. I was working for freaking priests in radio, I swear. These are the most honest guys there ever were. And it was at a company where the culture was terrified of payola. I'm telling you, if an independent record promoter, somebody who wanted you to put a record on the radio, if he took you to lunch, you'd probably get fired. That's the culture. I was always terrified of it. Plus, they had incredibly complicated systems to make sure that there was no payroll on those stations. Then I grew in my career, and I got into a situation with a big radio company where I was pretty much in charge of which songs got on the radio. I also knew that there were one or two levers that if you took away those levers, no independent record promoter, no record promoter for a label could give payola or get a spiff from payola. Wasn't going to happen. Now remember, through most of the radio industry, payola, giving money from a label to a disc jockey or a program director to play a song on the air, was pretty primitive. It wasn't like, here's $10,000 of cocaine. It was more subtle than that. It went like this. They'd pull into a crappy station in New Jersey, and they'd pull up the driveway, and they'd look at the program director and say, hey, Jay, can I borrow your keys? And the independent record promoter would take their keys and take the program director's car to the gas station and fill it up with a tank of gas. That's what most payola was like. But when it got to big stations and big deal people, it was complicated. Well, I knew some ways to make sure it could never happen at this group of stations that I was responsible for. I knew some ways that it could never happen. And I did some of those things. I did some of those things because I was afraid of it. I was like, I don't want to be dragged in front of a Senate subcommittee on payola one day. I put an end to it. And the people at the labels and in the music industry knew that I put an end to it. They knew. And about a week later, I came home to my nice apartment in Manhattan, my nice, sweet bachelor apartment in Manhattan. And every single thing in that apartment was trashed. All of it. Sofa was trashed. Television was trashed. Books taken off the bookshelves. The wooden radiator covers had been busted. The wooden radiator covers had been busted. Because I stopped an industry from being able to bribe another industry into doing what it wanted. Nothing was stolen. I would say that was a message. Wouldn't you say that was a message that I got? 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. I am live on the radio. I am live on your radio. And this is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling.
Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, starring Vic Ferrari.
Detective Vic Ferrari.
On Another Side of Midnight.
Detective Vic Ferrari.
Detective Vic Ferrari.
Hey, Walter. On tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I want to give you a behind-the-scenes tour into an NYPD precinct's lounge or break room. Now, most NYPD precincts have some type of place where the cops can have their meal hour. A lot of times, guys don't want to go to a restaurant or a diner because you're in uniform, there's a marked police car outside, and sure enough, someone's going to come inside with a question or they want someone arrested. So most cops, in the NYPD at least, when it's their meal hour, they'll ask the dispatch, can I take my meal? They'll tell them, yeah, and they'll go into the station house. Now, most NYPD break rooms are in the basement. I've seen a couple on the second floor. When I was in the 4-2, I was amazed that when you looked out the window on the second floor, you could see on the roof of the first floor all the empty beer cans from the cops from the 1970s. But later on in my career, when I worked in different places, most of the time the break rooms were in the basement. And usually what happens is cops will donate things like a couch, a love seat, and they usually got burn marks on them or scratch marks from the dog or the leather is worn off. But hey, it's a port in the storm. Then you got the table. The tables are usually disgusting and filled with gouges and nobody really cleans it. There's usually a refrigerator in there that's got some form of smell and black mold, and no one is going to clean these things. Even the cleaners in a precinct stay the hell away from the NYPD precinct break rooms. Although there was one guy I saw that used to try to lift up the seat cushions for extra change. Then you got a microwave that usually smells like burnt cheese or popcorn. And again, no one's going to clean this thing because that would just be too much work. But the crazy thing about the break rooms is most of the time, the cops got the TV on very low and the lights are dim in there. And there's usually, you know, a cop catching a couple of Z's on the couch, whether it's one of the inside guys is hiding from doing work or a cop on patrol who on his meal hour just wants to get a couple of minutes of sleep. But every now and then you'll get a guy going through a divorce or as a quasi-alcoholic. And basically they live down there until someone figures it out and tells the commanding officer and tells him to get the hell out of there. I once worked in a precinct where there was an old timer living for months. He was going through a divorce, had no money. His check was getting garnished. His kids weren't talking to him. And if you went down there and put on the TV, he'd start screaming at you. He also had furniture delivered to the precinct and he put together like a little IKEA desk set for himself down there. So you never know what you're going to find in an NYPD break room. This is retired NYPD detective turned author Vic Ferrari for Sterling on Red Apple Audio Network.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
I've been looking at a case that is not a UFO-related case, but it's one of America's greatest mysteries. And a lot of people know that there was an aviatrix, a female pilot, Amelia Earhart, who died in 1937, in what remains, I think, one of the biggest aviation mysteries of all time. And the research that I've been doing, the people that I've been talking to, suggest we may soon have an answer, that we may soon find out what happened to this brave woman who disappeared during what was, at the age of 39 for her, an attempt in 1937 to circumnavigate the globe along an equatorial route. And we know that 88 years ago, she was flying in a Lockheed twin-engine Model 10E Electra, and she was just on the final legs of flying across the Pacific from Ley in Papua New Guinea to a place called Howland Island in the middle of the Pacific. And what we've discovered, the people that I'm talking to who I've just interviewed for my show have uncovered recently declassified archives from the Amelia Earhart files that have only just recently been declassified in the National Archives. And they put an entirely different spin on the U.S. Navy's search for Amelia Earhart, which tragically suggests the awful possibility that the U.S. Navy was looking in the wrong place and that Amelia Earhart and her navigator quite probably died of thirst or starvation on a very remote coral atoll about 300 to 400 miles to the southeast of where the search was conducted. It's a place called Nikumarauru Island, and it did actually come up in the search. And a good friend of mine, Jeff Garcia, who's a very forensic investigator who's spent a lot of time, he spent months going through these archival files, he's had the opportunity for the first time to look at the original logs and the reports done by the U.S. Navy when it was doing its search in July 1937 over the Central Pacific Ocean. And the last known radio transmission from Amelia Earhart was, quote, "We are on the line 157337. We're running on line north and south." And she said they were low on fuel. They couldn't find Howland Island, which is where she was flying to. And they couldn't pick up the radio direction finding signal that was being sent out. And so the official presumption always has been that her Lockheed Electra ran out of fuel and ditched at sea somewhere in the vicinity of Howland Island, and she was declared dead 2 years later in January 1939. But the U.S. government records at the National Archives that have been searched by my friend Jeff Garcia, who I've just interviewed for Reality Check, it suggests very, very strongly the Gardner Island hypothesis, now known as Niku Mororo Island, that's part of Kiribati's, the country of Kiribati's group. And it suggests that the message that she sent out was misinterpreted by the U.S. Navy, and that, in fact, they focused their search to the west and northwest of Howland Island on the assumption that that's where she was. And it turns out very likely she was in fact way, way, way to the southeast below Howland Island, 300 or 400 miles to the southeast. And what's tragic is we now know there were records from the 1940s of a search that was done by a British chap who went to the island, a colonial officer called Gerald Gallagher, actually found partial human skeletal remains only a few years after she disappeared. And it included a woman's shoe and a man's shoe, and the bones were consistent with her height. They matched Amelia Earhart's height exactly. And so this has fueled the hypothesis that Earhart and Noonan survived a landing on this reef, became castaways, and eventually, tragically, perished on the island. But there is a search which is going to happen in the next few months when the weather improves. There's going to be an expedition go to Niku Mororo Island with the permission of the Kiribati government to investigate whether satellite photographs that show some kind of anomaly underwater show, in fact, what is suspected to be Amelia Earhart's aircraft. They think they might have found it. Tragically, while they were sent to Fiji for investigation and he kept records of what he'd found, for unknown reasons, the remains were lost and never, ever found again. So a DNA test can't be done to find out if it was Amelia Earhart's body. So the only way to really find out is to go back to the island, and that's what's been the subject of a request to the Kiribati government for about a year now. And there's an expedition from, I think it's Purdue University, which is going across, I think, in July. And the interesting thing is my friend Jeff Garcia, who did an interview with me this week, he's pieced together the logs and the records from the official investigation. And tragically, while I have no doubt at all that the U.S. Navy did what it thought it was doing, the right thing, and focused its search in where they thought was the right place, it does appear that there were really good signals to the southeast. There were even flares seen. It does appear that people saw emergency flares being let off, and that there were, in fact, distress calls with a woman's voice asking for rescue, saying that they were probably to the southeast. And unfortunately, this appears to have been lost to history until now. I think a lot of people thought, well, it could be anybody that had crashed on the island. And back then, of course, as we know, the war with Japan was happening in the Pacific, and there were a lot of planes crashing all over the Pacific Islands. So to be frank, it wasn't unusual for planes and bodies to be found in different parts of the Pacific. And I suspect the colonial officer's evidence fell through the cracks. I guess we'll know, hopefully, in a few months. She won the Distinguished Flying Cross. A lot of people think the DFC in America is only for the military, but before, I think, the late 1930s, they allowed anyone who did heroic things in aviation to win the DFC, and she earned it because she was the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean in 1932. And she also was the first person to fly solo from Honolulu, Hawaii to Oakland, California, across the Pacific. And she's such a hero for a lot of women of her generation. She was a real maverick, an aviation trailblazer, an author, an advocate for women's opportunities in a male-dominated field. And as you probably know, she was married to a very rich man, a publisher called George Putnam. So she had the money to buy the aircraft and indulge her habits and her hobby. And she used her fame, though, to challenge gender norms. And she pursued increasingly ambitious flights. And the tragedy is she was on the last leg, really, across the Pacific of what was the most dangerous leg across to Howland Island from Papua New Guinea. And if she'd made it to Howland, I suspect she would have made it back to huge renown in America, and they probably would have named an airport after her. But hopefully now, 88 years on, she will get some resolution of the mystery behind her death. It's funny, you know, I quite often fly across the Pacific to your beautiful country, and I'm sitting in a pressurized 787 or something like that, and I'm looking out of the window down on the Pacific Ocean, and I often think of the bravery of the early flyers who flew across the Pacific with just dead reckoning and celestial navigation when they could see the stars. And this system of navigation that she was using, which was essentially following the sun line on a magnetic bearing, it was fraught with risk, especially flying over water, because you had no way of knowing whether you were being blown south or north, whether you were being blown off course. And the only way really to know whether she was getting to Howland Island was to keep an eye out for the drop of coral in the ocean. And it was only 1 mile, 1.5 miles long, Howland Island. So it was a huge risk for her. Incredibly brave. And I think it was almost as brave as what, you know, if you think of a comparison, our Artemis II astronauts are doing at the moment, sitting on top of a liquid fuel rocket and flying to the moon. Well, back in 1937, what Amelia Earhart did was equally brave and equally stirring. And it will be lovely to see if there is a resolution to the mystery behind her death. People can watch me on News Nation and on YouTube. They can come to Reality Check with Ross Coulthart, C-O-U-L-T-H-A-R-T.
Ross Coulthart, who broke news on this show, that report coming up, Sydney, Australia's Ross Coulthart. You can find him at News Nation. Great reporter, great journalist. Very grateful for his reports with you and me. Blah, blah. Hi, I'm Walter Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Networks, and we are heard on great radio stations like WGN.
Maduro, I just grabbed this guy named Maduro, and suddenly he found out what happens when you F around. Maduro, we just nailed this freaking Maduro, and all his narco-commie friends will soon meet similar ends. Maduro, if I were him, I would really start praying that his execution will be delaying. Maduro, I'll never stop taunting Maduro.
Another Side of Midnight with Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. My phone number is 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Yes, it's shocking that I'm on WABC, KMOX, KDKA, and other giant blowtorch stations, as Dr. Sky calls it. It's always very scary to come on after Dr. Sky because, you know, I sound like I'm eight. Martin, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Networks at 800-848-9222. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Walter. How are you?
Excited to speak to you.
Okay. Well, listen, Sabrina Carpenter, she's hot, but I don't know what song she does. Justin Bieber, I don't know what song he does. These concerts that they're doing, you know what it is? It's a a thing where they get together and they share the experience. That's not for me, man. That's I have 1,000 CDs. If you want to talk about AC/DC, Deep Purple, guys that actually play instruments.
Vanilla Fudge. Are you into Vanilla Fudge?
Vanilla Fudge.
Yeah,
I know a song they did. I don't know. I know a song they did. Ted Nugent. Guys that play instruments. You know? This music today is no good. It's just useless.
Straight now. Let me get this, see if I'm right. You're not at Coachella? You're not at Coachella?
Hell no.
Did you go to Burning Man?
I missed that one too. Sorry.
Will you be going this year? Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden. Is that where you're going to go?
All right, thank you very much for
your call. I only want musical experts. Thank you for your call.
Okay, we have arrived at Coachella, and we're going to do a little house tour. This is Zach.
What's up?
Zach.
Wow. This is Zeke Sean. Joe, this is the best part. This is the best. I'm going to be in this pool all day.
She's
so
showing us
pretty.
A pool.
Yeah, I had to take it. I woke up at like 5:30.
We're staying at a house with like 15 to 20 people,
what?
Guys and girls. It's
what?
So much fun. Zach is cooking up some eggs in here.
Hello.
That's crazy. Zach's cooking eggs. Can you imagine that? Zach's cooking eggs. Zach is not a real name. That's a Nickelodeon name. Adults don't have names like Zach. That's a Nickelodeon name. But can you imagine, you go across the country, that woman, Ellie, she lives in New York City. She does a TikTok channel called Ellie for the Girls. Ellie for the Girls. And what she does is the most truly decadent thing on TikTok. You ready? I don't know how she earns a living. Ellie for the Girls. Every night she goes out, and she goes out to places that you would go to twice a year because that's how expensive they are. But she seems to be able to go out every night, and she keeps talking about vibe. And this place has a very soft vibe, and this place has a very exclusive vibe. But it's all about vibes. I don't want to hear the word vibe anymore. Let's not use the word vibe anymore unless we're applying it to a symphonic instrument. Other words, I don't want to know anything about the vibe in that restaurant or the vibe. God, I hate that word. I hate that word. A vibe. Well, now she's gone to Indio, California, to Coachella. And there's Ellie for the Girls at Coachella. And they've rented a house. An Airbnb would be my hunch. And the most exciting part to her is, look at this. It's a tiny pool. I thought the reason you went to these places was to go to a concert. She doesn't mention about the band that she wants to see. This is not how I went to concerts. This is not how I go to anything. I don't rent a house, talk about the pool, the vibe, and never mention the reason I'm being there. Very annoying. All of it's very annoying. But the part that scares me most when she says, and this is not a teenager, this is a professional-looking woman. She's saying, I'm really excited about sharing the house with 25 to 30 people. This is not a 10-bedroom house. 25 to 30 people. How drunk and stoned do you have to be as an adult to enjoy a home when you know 25 to 30 other people are going to be there? I guess I'm sounding really old and crotchety. Is that true? 800-848-9222. That's the live line. You and I can talk about concerts that you've been to, events you've been to that still vibe you, that still vibe you. Now I'm going to tell you, we're going to review what she said again, and then I'm going to tell you the concert that my wife and I like best.
Okay, we have arrived at Coachella, and we're going to do a little house tour. This is Zach.
What's up?
Zach's going to make eggs now.
This is Zeke Sean.
He's going to make eggs.
Joe. This is the best part.
A pool.
I'm going to be in this pool all day. Oh, so God. Pretty.
Yeah, I had to take it. I woke up at like 5:30 as if
we're staying at a house with like 15 to 20 people, guys and girls.
No,
it's so much fun.
No, it's not so much
Zach
fun.
Zach is cooking up some eggs in here. It's so pretty.
Yeah, that Zach sounds really hot. He's cooking up some eggs in there. Where? In the kitchen. There are things that just annoy me, that shouldn't annoy me. Do you find that there are things in life that annoy only you, don't seem to annoy anybody else? People who say vibe annoy me quite a bit. And it's right up there with waiting in line, annoys me quite a bit. All right, now I will confess to you the concert that I have liked best. You will therefore understand the scope of the concerts that I like. Yeah, I saw Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden, and I respect that. And I've seen Elton John, and I respect that. And I have seen The Strokes, but it was 15 years ago. But I got to tell you, the concerts I like best, I don't know if you can relate to this at all. The concerts I like best today are the ones that start on time and end on time. There are babysitters involved. There's paid-for parking involved. Therefore, I respect and appreciate the concerts that start on time, and I'll tell you the one that always starts on time. In just seconds, there's Mark in Pittsburgh at 800-848-9222. Mark, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mr. Sterling, sir.
Sir.
I enjoy the program, especially, you know, followed by Mr. Dr. Sky. And I was going to mention way back in the late mid to upper late 70s, my brother worked at Goldstone in Barstow at the tracking station, 85-foot disc that tracked previously missions around the Earth, because they would lose, you know, they didn't have the digital satellites that would relay the. So that kept them in touch. But he got sick there, and he had to move back after like 4.5 years. He got sick. Remember Aaron Brockovich did that water testing of, and then they made a movie out of it using, I forget what her name was.
Yeah, that was before I was born, but go ahead.
He got sick drinking that water, but yeah. He almost died, then he lived. Anyway, now, back in the mid-early 60s, my mom's brother...
Mark, I like you, but I don't have time to go through the history of the last century, but I'd like to hear your story. I'd like to hear your story, but can you get to the story?
Yeah, there's the nozzles, the cones that were on all the Apollo missions. My mom's brother, Tom, made them. He was a machinist up in Cleveland. And they got the contract to build the nozzles, which he had pictures of him standing next to a few out front of his.
So he had pictures standing next to some nozzles. Are we going to get there, Mark? Are we getting there?
Yeah, but that's what they used up, you know, to the last Apollo mission, those cones.
Right.
I don't know if they were made of titanium.
Oh, Mark, you got to get to the point of the story. I don't care what the cones are made out of.
Well, anyway, that's what they used. It was a critical part that they got the contract for, which it was amazing because, like, you think about it, you know. And then, of course, my brother tracked the Soyuz mission with the Soviets when they docked up. And
hey, Mark, thank you very much for listening to the show, and thank you for calling. Thank you very much. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Chris on Long Island, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Networks with Walter Sterling. Hi.
Hi, Walter Sterling. How are you? I've listened to you before, but you're talking about music and the music experience, and you're talking about social cultural things, and I'm taking an educated guess with my critical and deductive reasoning that you're a baby boomer, and we are already in to four generations after baby boomer. And the things that the Generation Z or Zoomers and Generation Alpha, which are the last two generations, the things that they're looking for in music or in entertainment are quite different from the baby boomer generation or the Generation X that came afterwards. The millennials, which sit in between, kind of started this trend that they're looking for an experience. But you need to add to that mix the delivery system and how the music and entertainment industry operates now. We have advanced technology, meaning the internet. So when we were going to a concert in our teens, we would see the opening act and we'd listen to them play their full 1 hour set. And then about a week later, we'd be in a music store going through actual vinyl records. And we would discover this opening act's album. But we were introduced to the opening act at a concert that we were going to see a major artist that we liked. And we would then decide whether we would buy the album.
Are we getting anywhere here, Chris? Are we
Absolutely.
Yes, where are we getting?
So when people put down what they're experiencing right now, it's just a completely different thing. People of younger generations are purchasing not full albums. They're purchasing a song. And they will collect a group of songs from a particular artist, and that will be their customized album.
I bet they would call that a playlist, huh, Chris?
Oh, wow.
I'll bet you a company like Apple might have thought of that and figured out how to sell singles. Just a hunch.
Actually, Napster thought of it and offered it to the industry, and the industry rejected it.
They thought he was a criminal, and the problem with the music industry
was after the fact. Yeah, they said you could deliver music in bits and bytes.
Yeah.
And then they rejected it. The music industry rejected it.
Yes, they rejected it because they were terrified of it. Meanwhile, they tend to be crooks. They tend to be cheap crooks. Thanks for the call, Chris. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's what an idea that Apple had to sell singles. I know they also were called, great-grandfather called them 45s. It's 50 minutes past the hour. Red Apple Audio Networks, Another Side of Midnight with Walter M. Sterling.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling.
Insurance isn't one size fits all. That's why drivers have enjoyed Progressive's Name Your Price tool for years now. With the Name Your Price tool, you tell them what you want to pay, and they'll show you options that fit your budget. So whether you're picking out your first policy or just looking for something that works better for you and your family, they make it easy to see your options. Visit Progressive.com. Find a rate that works for you with the Name Your Price tool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
All right, it's 53 past the hour with Walter Sterling on the Great Shift, the Late Shift. It's just you and me. Here we are working, staying up late. This is who we are. And the day people do not understand it. The day people don't want to know anything about this. They view us with suspicion. They don't understand it when you and I say to them, I really prefer to be up all night. I much prefer that. To me, the greatest horror is to run into somebody who says, I love to get up early. I saw that book called The 5 a.m. Club. There's no way that I was going to buy the book The 5 a.m. Club because I know what that was going to say. It was going to say this arrogant crap that you are better off getting up at 5 in the morning. Just try to get up at 5 in the morning and see what happens. Yeah, I know it'll happen. I'll crash at 1 p.m. I have no interest in that. By the way, all of the benefits that you hear about from the 5 a.m. Club are the same as the benefits we have. If you stay up late and you do your cycle where you go to bed at 7 or 8 in the morning and you sleep till 3 in the afternoon, it's no different than getting up at 5 in the morning. There is no difference. And I don't work on a farm. Do you work on a farm? Are you a farmer? I don't think so. The arrogance that goes with it, it also goes with you should be a vegetarian. Why don't you be a vegetarian? It'd be so good for you to. It's not particularly good for me to be a vegetarian. I don't think so. I've never heard a meat eater. I've never heard a filet mignon guy, woman, say, you know, you really should eat more meat. Why don't you eat more meat? Wouldn't that be a good idea? Never heard any of us say that. I love filet mignon. I love chicken. I love chicken parmesan. I love all of those exotic foods. But I'd never say to you, you should eat more chicken parmesan. Never. Just, it would not come up. Meanwhile, the people who eat sprouts all day and algae, they eat algae. They think it's okay to say, you should eat more algae. Why don't you try, if you went on a pure algae diet and a fasting diet where you skip every fourth meal, just skip every fourth meal, and you'll be so much healthier. They actually believe they have the right to say that to you and me. They do not. Here's what I think is the best possible diet. There's a brand new product out worth trying that all three of my daughters have tried, and I'm afraid that it solves all of their problems, but I don't see anything wrong with it. Nutella now makes ice cream. Let's just think about that. Nutella, the most suspicious product of our lifetime. Where does it come from? Italy? What are you talking about? What is it made out of? Hazelnut paste? When you were being raised, because you are a boomer, when you were being raised, you didn't ever hear about Nutella. That's a new product. But your kids are obsessed with Nutella. Well, now there's Nutella ice cream. I don't even want to think about that. I don't want to ever have a container of Nutella ice cream in front of me because it will never leave me. I don't want to know. 800-848-9222. As for that's my live line, and you get to go on the radio when you call that. Now, here's the concert my wife and I like best. We like it best because they start on time and end on time. And when I say it, I don't want any crap from you. But I'll tell you, there's a side benefit to it. We like Hanson. You know those three guys who sang Umbop? We like Hanson. Don't laugh, Tony. We like Hanson. And they start on time. And they end on time. And all their songs, we understand every word. We felt that way when their hits came out. It's not like an age thing. We felt that way when their hits came out. They each Hanson brother has seven kids, and therefore they're highly motivated to start on time and end on time because their babysitting fees must be enormous. They behave. They get on stage on time. They sing familiar songs. And here's the thing that'll shock you and the thing that's my tip. They sell out. Every concert they do sell out. They tour all year. They're working all year. They've been touring for the past 20, 25 years. I'm talking about Hanson. And they sell out. But here's the other thing. If I was single, I'd go to a Hanson concert. Because at the Hanson concerts are beautifully dressed women, 35 to 45 years of age with ankle bracelets. You know what I'm talking about. These are country club girls. By and large, we're talking country club girls with good jobs, VCs, executive assistants at a high level, the number one account executive in any business. Those women go to Hanson concerts. And it's 80% women because no boyfriend will go with them. And no guy is going to go alone. And no guy is going to say to his three guy friends after the game, why don't we go to a Hanson concert next week instead of going to this football game? It's my social advice for you. 800-848-9222. Dave Scott with an update on all things UFO and metaphysical coming up in just seconds on the Red Apple Audio Networks with Walter Sterling.
Is another side of midnight with Walter Sterling. Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios. Here's Walter Sterling.
Tight as a drum.
On WABC, the biggest all-night show on American radio.
Red Apple Audio Networks, another side of midnight. Here's my phone number. It's 800-848-9222. You can go on live with Dave Scott. Dave Scott, an expert in all things metaphysical, UFOs, Bigfoot. Time portals, and he's Canadian. Dave Scott, welcome to Another Side of Midnight.
I thought I was a known Canadian, not just a Canadian, a known Canadian.
Well, there are many new misfits listening tonight. I'm trying to introduce you slowly so you don't scare them. Did you go to Coachella? Did you go to Coachella yesterday? Today is day two of Coachella.
No, I've never been to Coachella, you know. I'd like to go. I think it'd be fun, but you know, my problem is when I go to an event like that, the bands that I want to see are always playing at the same time. And I don't like making choices like that. It bugs me.
The Strokes are playing, and Justin Bieber.
No, I'm more of a Guns N' Roses guy.
Yeah, I think they're out of business.
Guns N' Roses? No, they're touring. I've already got tickets for Vancouver. Oh yeah, I've already got tickets for them in Vancouver coming up here in August.
Really? What kind of shape is he in?
They're sounding beautiful.
Really?
I'm not gonna lie.
Well, good for them.
I saw them a couple of years ago when they were in Vancouver. This will be my ninth time seeing them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Wow. All right. Well, what do we know from outer space? How did you feel about the orbiting capsule around the moon? What did we learn from that?
Well, I think we learned that, you know, we had four very exuberant astronauts coming back to Earth when they landed. And I, you know what, Walter? I'm still excited about it. I don't know why I'm just so pumped up. And
well, you should be. It's totally worth being pumped up about. I agree. You bet.
You know, like, this was my generation's Apollo. Like, I was born in 1973, so I didn't really get to really understand the Apollo missions. I mean, my first kind of foray into looking into space was when I was a kid, when Challenger first launched, and I thought the space shuttles were very cool. And then I remember in my hometown of Abbotsford, British Columbia, in 1982, I got to meet Sally Ride because she was there as a special guest at the air show. And I was like 8 years old. She gave me a sticker, a NASA sticker.
Nice.
And I thought that was the greatest thing ever. And I think somewhere I actually still have the program for that. But, you know, something about space just makes me excited. Never mind the UFOs and everything and alien life that I'm into, you know, with Spaced Out Radio. But, I mean, there was just something very exciting about doing this again. And, you know, there's still a lot of people out there who are arguing whether or not this Artemis mission was real, whether or not the Apollo missions were real, whether Stanley Kubrick made the films on the original of Apollo missions to make sure that everything looked good and sound on camera. But this time I really feel that this was just an absolute wonderment, and I'm glad I got to enjoy watching the NASA YouTube channel with the live feed all the time. But I'll tell you, they sure need to do something about the size of that capsule. That capsule isn't big enough for one person, let alone four.
I'm sure that was a weight issue. I'm sure they couldn't make it bigger. I'll bet you anything they tried really hard to come up with a way to make it bigger, don't you think?
Well, I mean, when they were showing the pictures and they got that big netted cargo net there, I mean, that took up like at least a third of the room, at least what it was looking like on camera. I mean, like, where did they sleep? I mean, you couldn't even put a toilet on there. You know, in typical NASA fashion, which they always seem to butcher things, how do you send them up with a broken toilet?
With a woman.
That one I'm not too worried about. It's more the broken toilet. Like, how are you supposed to sit down and enjoy your you know, reading or playing your video games on your phone while you're doing your business? You just can't because you're afraid.
Part of the reason they have toilet trouble, I've read about this. I actually have studied this. I've read about their toilet trouble because they consistently have a toilet trouble. It's because they're insane. They want to protect the space environment, and they come up with elaborate vacuum systems so nothing leaks. Do you know how the Russian capsules deal with the toilet? Do you want to know what they do?
They just eject it out?
They have a tank. It's like a porta potty.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, they eject it out, but it's nothing more complicated than sit down and do it, and then you're done. That's all the Russians do. Meanwhile, we have vacuum tubes. We have elaborate collection systems. We have recycling systems. Of course it's going to break.
Well, you know what? I mean, let's face it, though. Would you really want to be on a spacewalk sometime out there, like astronaut Sterling out there, you know, maybe repairing a satellite or something on the International Space Station, and then all of a sudden you look up and there's a big piece of dookie coming your way and hits you straight in the mask at 16,000 miles an hour?
Yeah, TMI. So let's move on from this subject.
I'm just saying.
I heard you. It's okay.
Well, it has this whole thing, if we get serious on the conspiratorial side for a second here,
yeah,
this whole thing has opened up the can of worms again, Walter, in regards to whether or not we're actually going into space. The flat earthers, even though we don't pay too much attention to them, they are convinced that this was, you know, because the rocket takes off and it goes on an arc, there's no way instead of going straight up, which it should in their world, you know, that there's no way that we are able to get off this planet because, you know, there is some sort of, or in their world, there is no sort of space. We live in like a Truman show movie type of world with a big bubble over top. And they get confused because they think there's two moons instead of one. But there are a lot of people who do not believe NASA. I was talking to a good friend of mine on Spaced Out Radio, Lee Strauss, who is the most pragmatic person you could ever meet. And he's like, I don't buy it. He goes, NASA has pulled the wool over our eyes way too many times that to sit there and say that after 50 years of not knowing where they put the previous plans to the Apollo mission rockets, that all of a sudden, you know, we're able to do this when we've lost all the schematics and the mathematics regarding radiation in the Van Allen belt and going to the moon. We've forgotten how to get there. I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous. So there are a lot of people who are skeptical about NASA, whether or not we did it. I personally think we did. I enjoyed every minute of watching it, and I cannot wait for it to happen again.
I don't understand why when Elon Musk demonstrated that we could have retrievable rockets, that we didn't use a retrievable rocket.
Well, and that's another thing, too. I mean, you know, NASA's still in the dark ages with a lot of their technology, Walter. I mean, it's like they just went back to the factory and said, okay, what do I have to do here in order to get these rockets up? We'll just splash these in the ocean like we have every other launch that we've taken. Why bring them back? Well, geez, how about saving a ton of money? But when you're with NASA and you have an open checkbook like they do, you just waste it. You don't care. It's not about reach.
But you see, what I don't understand, Dave Scott, a known broadcaster in Canada, an expert on space, Spaced Out Radio. Now, Dave Scott, what I don't understand is for 2 or 3 years, it appeared that we were developing technology for space in sync with Elon Musk. that we seem to be side by side concurrently developing technology with Elon, and then now Elon's disappeared. We don't hear any more about him. He's not doing any cool things. And you'll recall 2 or 3 years ago, he showed us, he demonstrated a retrievable rocket, a rocket that came back down and landed upright. Oh my gosh. I thought that's what we were going to see next. We haven't heard a peep about Elon Musk in, since the Troubles.
Well, I mean, I think too, because of his politics and the way he kind of aligns himself politically, I think that, you know, they figure if they don't give him the press of space and NASA turns out to be, you know, the baby doll again, the golden goose, shall we say, then we're going to be looking at, you know, NASA being the heroes again, because they've always been the heroes. And what do we need Elon Musk for if we have NASA? I mean, I think the very brilliant and talented and never funny Whoopi Goldberg actually said that. If we have NASA, what do we need SpaceX for? Well, it's a private company, number one.
And then I thought, because of the investment, that we were going to hear from Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos invested a lot of money in space. Elon Musk invested a lot of money in space. And I thought they were going to be participating in this, sharing the expense, learning from it. And they've both disappeared.
Well, Elon did go on X and he did congratulate NASA. He did, he did do that. And I believe just a couple days ago, there was another SpaceX launch, but we're just not paying attention to it because we're used to it now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, I'm not. I still think, you know, one of my dreams, and I've added this to my bucket list now, I want to go, I want to watch a SpaceX launch live. I want to go and I want to see these rockets come back down. I mean, how cool would that be to see in person?
Right. Now, are you aware of anything that they saw or discovered on the other side of the moon? Because that was the big appeal of this launch for me. And by the way, if you want to talk to Dave Scott, that would be great. Participate in this discussion, especially if you're a flat earther. The number is 800-848-9222. We are live, 800-848-9222. And we're talking about our space adventure the past week, whether or not it made any sense. And, of course, the flat earth conversation, always popular on All Night Radio. What did they see on the other side of the moon, Dave Scott?
I was actually surprised, Walter, when I watched their coming home press conference that they just did, okay, of how excited these guys were. And not a single reporter actually asked the aliens, UFOs, or bases on the dark side of the moon. I was waiting for it. I wanted that question. And it almost makes me wonder whether or not those questions were banned. Like, if you were actually, and I'm not saying they were, okay, but in a conspiratorial sense, I was wondering whether or not, you know, if you got your press pass, look, we're not going to be asking, NASA saying we're not going to be asking stupid questions about were there bases on the dark side of the moon or anything like that. Here's one thing that we do know is that almost every launch that NASA has ever made into space, going from Gemini to Mercury to Apollo to the shuttle missions, they all have had, the majority of them, some sort of UFO following them. The transcripts are out there. NASA never admitted. It's one of the worst kept secrets that has ever taken place. But you can actually go read transcripts. And a good friend of mine, Darcy Weir, who's a documentarian out of Vancouver, British Columbia, he actually did a documentary on NASA and the space program's interceptions by UFOs. And there are transcripts. You can go Google it. And you can actually read the transcripts from the astronauts as they are seeing some very weird things up on the moon when they are there, whether it's craft that are following them, whether it's when they are on the moon seeing things fly by. It is alleged that when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin first landed on the moon, Armstrong and Aldrin looked off into the distance and they saw something square sitting on the moon. And then a few minutes later, when they looked again, it was gone.
All right. What was that? Hold it right there. Dave, we want to hear more about the square things they saw on the moon coming up in just seconds with you at 800-848-9222, talking about the great space adventure that we had this week. And are you a flat earther? I'm always fascinated to talk to flat earthers, especially at this time of night. Red Apple Audio Network's Another Side of Midnight, 800-848-9222 with Walter Sterling and Dave Scott.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
All right, I'm with Dave Scott, a known Canadian. What is this? What is this? What is this? Hey, Tony, what's this?
I have no idea.
Where's it coming from? What?
You're playing that. It's coming from your...
No. Huh. All right. Well, it's good to have intermission music. That was exciting. I was afraid it was Dave Scott. I really don't know where that was coming from. But there's so many audio sources because it's a very big radio station. Pete, Staten Island Pete, welcome with Dave Scott and Walter Sterling at 800-848-9222. Hi, Pete.
Hey, Walter and Dave. I'm wondering if they're going to have a parade for these astronauts when they come back. Yeah, I looked forward to that as a kid, and I know a lot of kids would look forward to it because this was very interesting. I was glued to the TV for the whole thing when they took off to when they came home, and I'm all for space. I think we learn a lot from it. We do a good experiments of how the body is conditioned, and I think it prolongs life, you know. So I'm all 100% for space travel.
All right. Well, there you have it. Staten Island Pete, all for space. Thank you very much for the call, Pete. 800-848-9222. Do you have any comments about that, Dave? Anything you'd like to say to Pete?
Well, I love the name Staten Island Pete, so thank you for calling in. I don't think we'll get any type of parade or anything like that, but I do believe that you're right. They do need to be celebrated. This was a major victory once again for everybody in the space program. And it was just, I'm just like Pete, where I'm still amazed by it.
Jimmy, welcome to Another Side of Midnight at 800-848-9222. You're with Dave Scott. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, guys. Thank you for letting me in. Appreciate talking to both of you. I appreciate it. Dave, number one, the United States of America has the gold medal in hockey. That's number one.
That was cruel. Jimmy, that was cruel. Kidding. You know that was cruel.
I know. I'm just kidding around. I'm just kidding around. Sure. But when people say flat earther, you know, that's a bad connotation. I'm not sitting here saying that I'm a flat earther, but what I'm saying is, you know, if we went to the moon in 1969, why haven't we gone back to the moon since then? There is more computing power in the cell phone that I'm calling you on right now than there was in the spacecraft in 1969. We've never landed on the moon. And we haven't this time. I have a lot more things to say, but I would love to have an open conversation if that's allowed. But you know, there are a lot of things that don't line up with, for me, there are a lot of things that don't line up.
All I can tell you is I had on a NASA payload expert, a space station payload expert, a high-ranking military official about 3 years ago. And before it was popular to ask the question, why haven't we gone back to the moon? I asked her, why haven't we gone back to the moon? Stephanie Osborne. I asked Stephanie Osborne, why haven't we gone back to the moon? And she answered, for the first time I ever heard this answer, Jimmy, Dave, the answer was, because we've sold off the rocket boosters, we've sold most of the land where the pads were, and scientists...
We lost the technology.
Yeah,
we lost the technology.
Let me finish. And scientists have taken home the plans and the information. It's in different scientists' basements and rec rooms and was thrown away. And I'm ashamed to say, I didn't say to her, what the hell are you talking about? That was a 10-year project, gazillions of dollars, and it's in people's basements. And I shouldn't have believed it, and I don't believe it. I also don't believe it was anything sinister. She said what she learned when she joined NASA was that it was never a scientific mission. It was always a political mission to beat Russia, and that was it. And the minute we beat Russia in the minds of the government, we were done.
Do you think that we will be able to see humans walking on the moon in our lifetime?
What do you think,
we have
Dave?
Different lifetimes.
What do you think, Dave?
Well, there's two words of thought on that. Number one, there are many people who believe we already have people on the moon, including bases on the moon right now that are very international. So you'd have Americans, Canadians, Russians, Chinese, Japanese, all working together. But if we look at it from a political standpoint, there is absolutely no way, as China's space program continues to grow very fast because they seem to have an endless amount of budget for things like this. There is no way that I believe NASA or the U.S. government will allow a Chinese astronaut to hit the moon before Americans re-walk on the moon again. So I think it's about to get very political again. But if you believe in the secret space program, which is allegedly out there, there have been people on the moon and bases on the moon for decades already.
All right. Yes, thank you very much.
Yes,
thank you for the call. Dave Scott will have more information for us in just seconds. Walter M. Sterling, you and I are on WGN in Chicago. That is a great radio station. Thank you for airing us in Chicago on WGN. Red Apple Audio Network's Another Side of Midnight. Now, you know what, gentlemen? I need a new access code. I got an error message on my software that said timed out. It said it had timed out, and therefore I need another one. But if you want to whisper in my ear, that's all right. 800-848-9222. What is the secret space program? What is the secret space program, Dave Scott?
Well, it's an alleged program that goes under major black budget program, which has supersonic technology that already has craft that can fly anywhere around the world very quickly, probably at hypersonic speed, that can take people, scientists, technologists already up to the moon and back. Now, this has been a rumor ever since a program was accidentally leaked called Solar Warden a number of years ago, which actually alleges that they have already created bases on the moon, and that's why there really hasn't been a rush on it. These craft that people believe they are flying up to the moon are these big black triangles called TR-3Bs. Now, these triangles are absolutely massive. I have heard that they are said that they could hold up to 150 to 300 people. Some believe that they don't even ever land, that they are just always in space or in the air somewhere. And then there are these pilot vehicles that can go dock with them to load up scientists or technologists or even new pilots to be able to climb back up into the moon. Now, many people would believe, well, how do we power that? Well, if you look at United States Navy aircraft carriers, which are nuclear powered, they have the ability to stay out at sea for up to 20 to 30 years. Now, if you could say that these craft actually have nuclear power, or maybe that they have figured out through maybe alien technology or other technologies that are way far advanced than what we see from right now, that these craft have the ability to use anti-gravitics or something along those lines in order to keep their travel going at any time, anywhere.
What I don't understand, Dave Scott, is if we have craft that can hold hundreds of people and go to the moon and set up a base, why wouldn't we just brag about that? Why would that be a secret?
That's the million-dollar question, or in this case, maybe a trillion-dollar question.
Because you even gave the craft a number, a model number. Probably yes. True, then.
It could be. It could be. I've seen two black triangles in my life, and I would love to see another one because they are just absolutely amazing. Now, a lot of people believe that a lot of these are alien technology, especially the extra large ones that seem to be, as people have seen before, the size of a city, so to speak. That if you put this craft on, say, pick your city, New York or Chicago, that this thing is going to cover everything up. I mean, I don't know if mankind has made anything that big. I mean, hell, where would you even put it? But that's where I believe that these are more of an alien type craft. But other people are convinced that there are these TR-3Bs that are very large, that are maybe 200, 300 feet long. You know, I mean, if you look at a C-5 Galaxy transport plane, well, that's almost 200 feet long with almost a 200 foot wingspan. And it's still considered one of the largest cargo planes in the world. Now, imagine maybe adding another 100 feet to that, maybe make it a little bit more width-wise. And if we're able to do that, where were they built? Well, that's easy to say. It's not where it's built, because it's built everywhere. That's why you have plants in Kentucky and Missouri and Seattle and in Washington State and California and New York, because a lot of these people don't know what they're building. They just know they have to manufacture the parts. And then they take it to some technological base. Maybe it's Area 51 or one of the secret islands up in Alaska or in the Aleutians, or maybe it's out at Diego Garcia where people will never see. And that's where they may launch them. Some people have even claimed that maybe that's where they launch them from, Antarctica.
800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. You and I are talking to Dave Scott, the host of Spaced Out Radio, a Canadian radio show where they have a very different perspective on Earth. It's 35 past the hour. Dave, how do we find you online?
Easy. We're on every major podcast network, including Spotify. You can find us on the YouTube side where we actually put video. And you can see my face for radio there. And our website is spacedoutradio.com.
Dave Scott, great friend of the show. Always amazing information about outer space, metaphysics, time portals. And Dave Scott will be with us again you'll definitely be here next Sunday. So thank you very much for being on Another Side of Midnight. Thank you, Dave Scott. Now, I want to share with you this amazing article that has occupied my day. And the article is called The Lost History of Human Civilization by Duncan Birch. And I'm just going to share with you a couple of the highlights of this. Archaeologists seek to understand ages even more remote than tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of years. You see, there's been this endless debate in our lifetimes as to how long have humans been here? This is in the Epoch News. How long have humans been here? And archaeologists, they're trying to figure out if it's been tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of years or even millions of years. And they have considerably less material on which to base their conclusions. Their task is similar to figuring out a large jigsaw puzzle with only a handful of pieces, or understanding the plot of a novel from which only a few pages have survived. While based on tangible evidence from the scientific examination and study of discovered artifacts, archaeology also necessarily involves a considerable amount of speculation. Hard archaeology, conservative archaeology, they're still guessing. When new evidence or new insights of past discoveries emerge, they may confirm, refuse, or challenge previous archaeological inferences. Obviously, technological advances in recent decades have created unprecedented changes in archaeology. Modern advancements in aviation, radar, sonar technology have enabled archaeologists to locate and recover new evidence from previously unaccepted, inaccessible situations. So the oldest known cave art is dated to 68,000 years ago. Human beings painted on the caves 68,000 years ago. And that conflicts with what you and I have always been told, which is that the human species evolved and started walking around 10,000 years ago. Well, that never made any sense anyway. But they're always debating when this happened. Now, the reason I say that this has taken up my day is when I first saw this article, I was fascinated by it. It's an Epic Times, Epic News, what do they call it? Epic Times? Yeah, don't bother me with the details. And it said the oldest known cave art, the drawings were dated by analyzing small amounts of uranium in the mineral layers that had formed on top of the paintings, thus providing the youngest possible dates of the art. And it places human ancestors in the region at about 15,000 years earlier than previously believed. The cave drawings, you've seen these pictures, which include a variety of hand stencils, figurative animal paintings, as well as the oldest known depictions of human figures, were also created over an incredibly long period of time, demonstrating that early humans regularly inhabited the area for at least 45,000 years. At least 45,000 years, we had been visiting these caves. We'd been going in there, drawing, putting things up. It's absolutely fascinating. Duncan Birch is the writer of the article, and this is the part where my day is involved. I have spent the day trying to get a hold of Duncan Birch, who wrote this article, and I will have him on this show sometime this week. I guarantee it. I was so fascinated with, 45,000 years that we had been visiting the same cave, been drawing on the same walls, 45,000 years, that I want the information. I spent working for you. I spent the day trying to find Duncan Birch. Now, here's what I did. I just want you to know this isn't a casual thing. I called the publisher of Epic Times. I called their PR firm. I called one of their bookers, somebody who works with the writers. All of us have been trying to get a hold of Duncan Birch because I wanted him on this show for obvious reasons. Fascinated by this, right? This is the sort of thing that we're mesmerized by. A 45,000-year gap between the first time they could identify a human being in that cave and today. I will get Duncan on because I know you want to know about it. I know it's fascinating. It's an amazing thing. And you and I will talk about that. Now, I wanted to discuss, let me get this up here. I wanted to give us a break. And the way I'm going to give us a break, oh, I know how we're going to give us a break. One second here. I know we're excited about Coachella. Very exciting. I know that we're fascinated by Coachella.
Okay, we have arrived at Coachella, and we're going to do a little house tour. This is Zach.
What's up?
Wow. This is Zeke Sean. Joe. This is the best part. This is the best. I'm going to be in this pool all day. So pretty.
Yeah, I had to take it. I woke up at like 5:30 as if
we're staying at a house with like 15 to 20 people, guys and girls. It's so much fun. Zach is cooking up some eggs in here.
Hello.
It's so pretty.
That's who goes to Coachella. There's no need for you to go. 100,000 people are going there. Obviously, no need for you to go. It's fine. It's all right. Earworms. There are certain songs that when you and I hear them, we can't get them out of our heads. And I thought about what are the three or four songs that are at the top of my earworm song that if I hear it, I know I'm going to be stuck for the rest of the day just thinking about that song.
Fall into the gap now, get to the gap. We got four tons of Levi's waiting for you. At the gap now, fall into the gap. With the world's greatest selection, it's true. At the gap now, fall into the gap. Whatever your shape, sex, or size, we got your favorite Levi's jeans. At the gap now, shoot off the gap, gap, fall into the gap.
I don't think there's a better earworm song than the original Gap radio jingle. And as a marketer, I believe that if the Gap put that back on the radio and only bought radio and stopped wasting money on television and other media, they just bought radio, their brand would explode and be incredibly successful again. But then I thought, well, what other earworm songs am I haunted by?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, Schlemiel, Schlemazel, Hudson Pepper Incorporated.
I bet you can't think of a better one. I bet you can't think of a better earworm song than those two. But I thought of then two more. And I'm like, whenever I hear these, I regret it. I'm going to be stuck with this for the next 48 hours.
The new boy in the neighborhood lives downstairs and is understood. He's there just to take good care of me. He's one of the family. Charles in charge of our days and our nights.
That isn't even a show that you watched. You never even watched it. But if you heard it coming from the other room, it haunted you. I got one more. So I think this is the most haunting one. Yes, Zoe Deschanel's show, New Girl. But here's the genius of Zoe Deschanel, who's singing this. Her genius is she wrote it. And in TV, if you write the theme song to one of those, between all the music rights nonsense, that'll make you richer than starring in the show. And oh, by the way, she starred in the show. Can you think of better earworm songs than the one that I have demonstrated to you? My superior knowledge of pop culture, can you think of anything? I doubt it. 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling. Oh, who's here? Tony, who's here? What's that?
Hey, Walter Sterling. This is your cousin, Breezy. Listen, I think that it's time that you took a little break. So I'm going to play a song that I actually introduced years ago right here on WABC Radio. So, Walter, hit the trail, and I'll take care of business.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling.
You're listening to the Walter Sterling Show. Other Side of Midnight, I'm Jake Novak, filling in for Walter just for a moment here. I wanted to get you updated on a couple of top stories that I'm preparing for the NewsHour Weekend Edition, which will be with you in about an hour.
It's 3:53 Eastern time right now as I speak to you live. Live radio, folks. You take the time to turn on your radio, turn on your phone, turn on your apps, and you hear tape programming. Come on. Anyway, want to get you updated on a couple of the top stories that I'm working on. 5 a.m., the NewsHour Weekend Edition gets started. Of course, a big story, no deal. There was no deal after a marathon session between the United States and Iran. Direct talks, by the way, in Pakistan. And they've all gone home. No deal made. can't say I'm shocked. But J.D. Vance saying it's unfortunate no deal was made. Now, the question is, of course, is the shooting going to start? And if so, when? And I think the other big story that really runs with this is that maybe those talks were doomed from the start of yesterday afternoon, because that is when the United States sent several destroyers through the Strait of Hormuz, despite the fact that Iran had threatened to shoot at them and attack them if they did. That didn't happen. Possibly because Iran was afraid to do so or didn't have the capability to do so, whatever reason. And more than just making a statement there with those destroyers going through the strait without being attacked, the United States says they are doing that to try to establish a pathway through the strait. In other words, they're going to tell all the other countries of the world as a favor to them, here's the way that you can go. You're not always going to get an escort, but sometimes you will from the U.S. Navy, and that's how that goes. So, the two stories I'm working on, starting in about an hour.
And Jake, how serious a problem do you think J.D. has caused here? Do you think this was his failure as a negotiator, or do you think he was outmaneuvered?
No, I don't think there was any outmaneuvering. The U.S. was going to stay very firm in what it wanted. Iran came there thinking that the news media pressure from the mainstream media and perhaps the poll numbers or the fact that they thought maybe President Trump cared more about the markets. They came in with some ridiculous demands, including demanding that Israel stop attacking Hezbollah. They tried to expand the ceasefire deal to that. That was a non-starter. But I think actually what really doomed this is those destroyers going through the strait yesterday. The only card Iran has to play is harassing the traffic through the strait. And the U.S. destroyers going through the strait while those talks were going on without being attacked, when Iran said they would attack them, and definitely creating some kind of confidence for other countries. Hey, if we go through this path that the U.S. just created, we'll be fine. That took away Iran's last card. So it absolutely entrenched the U.S. They didn't have to give anything into Iran. So, no, I think this was just a case of Iran coming in there. I think the Trump administration expected them, or hoped, I should say, they would just kind of surrender, or almost completely surrender. And they didn't. So no deal.
But Jake Novak, what I don't understand, and this may sound flippant, it's not. Who the hell did J.D. negotiate with? I thought we had killed everybody who was running that country. Like, who was left for him to negotiate with?
Well, that's a great question, because it creates this whole problem. The person who seems to be running Iran now, de facto running it, was the lead negotiator. He's the speaker of the Iranian parliament. His name is Mohammad Ghalibaf. And here's the problem. When you're the only guy left standing after all these other leaders have been killed, a big stink of suspicion starts to creep up on you. There are already people in Iran, both pro-regime and anti-regime, who are saying, hey, did this guy give up the coordinates and locations of his superiors or colleagues so that he could be the last man standing? So he already had a little bit of suspicion on him.
Yes.
We know it now really does seem like the son of the Ayatollah Khamenei, Mutaba Khamenei, is alive. But it is almost completely confirmed now that he's very, very badly injured. Now, we've known that since the first couple of days of the war. But now, like, we're getting that confirmation now from more sources. And he's just there as a symbolic guy. So this guy Ghalibaf, who apparently is running the show, and he was undermined so many times before this started. But he was really, really undermined. As while they're talking, the U.S. is sending these destroyers through the strait. If you listen to the mainstream media or read them, you may not even know that happened yesterday, although it was a huge story and there was video of it and everything. I mean, we've talked to Walter and I many times. You and I have talked about how, forget about right wing or left wing or whatever. The fact that the mainstream news media doesn't know a good story when it sees it is the biggest frustration to me. Seeing naval destroyers going through these disputed waters, these dangerous waters, why that video wasn't plastered on every TV station. It's compelling video. It's cool stuff. And yes, they won't do it. And to me, if you're negotiating and your only card is, hey, you know, you American imperialists, we will continue to attack the strait. Well, no, you're not. We just sent our naval ships through there. You know, have a nice day.
Jake Novak, thank you for the update. The top 5 at 5 coming up in 1 hour on the Red Apple Audio Network's Another Side of Midnight.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
It's Ross Colt's Hard Time on Another Side of Midnight from the Red Apple Audio Networks.
You might remember, Walter, when you watch movies about sharks, sharks apparently can detect your heartbeat. They're apparently capable of detecting your electromagnetic signature. And as someone who's swum in the water with sharks, I've always been very well aware of that when I've been free diving in the water with friends of mine. Why am I telling you this, my friend? Well, the most shocking allegations emerged today in that august newspaper, the New York Post. And it's been confirmed to me by people in the Pentagon that this is for real. The claim is that to recover the weapons systems officer, the guy, the poor lieutenant colonel who disappeared in Iran and had to be rescued in a massive military operation, it's been reported that the CIA and the Defense Department used something called, and this is such a good name, Ghost Murmur. And Ghost Murmur is the first real-world operational mission using a type of quantum technology to locate and assist in the rescue of this officer. And according to sources close to this program, including Trump's own CIA director, John Ratcliffe, if your heart is beating, we will find you. Ghost Murmur was the key technology that pinpointed this airman from, some reports suggest, up to about 40 miles distance. So that's, I can even concede 40 miles would take you into orbit when traditional search methods were insufficient. And if you remember very early on in the weekend, there was a suggestion that some type of new technology had been used to detect this poor chap who was stuck in Iran. Incredible story of survival and very thrilling that he's been rescued. But what we now know is that this tool was developed by Lockheed Martin's Skunk Works, and it's a type of classified technology never previously fielded. It's futuristic, sci-fi-like system, never before used in combat or search and rescue. And although there's been sort of not that much detail coming from Trump and Ratcliffe, who crowed about this in the press conference, there is, and I've been doing some research on it today, a lot of evidence to show that the human heart generates a faint biomagnetic field, which is measurable via what's called, and I'm saving up to make this word pronounceable, magnetocardiography, or MCG.
Wow.
And apparently our hearts do produce tiny currents, and they create magnetic fields under what's called Ampere's law and Maxwell's equations. The signal is incredibly weak. It's typically a picotesla or a femtotesla range, a billionth or less of Earth's natural magnetic field. But apparently, this human heartbeat has a distinct fingerprint, a repeatable approximately 1 hertz rhythmic waveform, which is unique enough to be isolated from background noise. And if you believe what was said at this press conference and what the New York Post has published today, this is what they used to detect this pilot, WSO. It's called quantum magnetometry, a long-range capability which exploits quantum, which of course is a word to explain something that none of us will ever understand, which essentially allows us to detect, believe it or not, a human heartbeat from miles away. And believe it or not, there are papers that show that this is a technology that's being discussed in the scientific literature. And of course, the speculation now is, Walter, what other super weapons does the US and other nations have up their sleeves? And where did this technology come from?
Ross Coulthard, do you have an update for us on the Major General who disappeared 2 weeks ago?
He's still missing. It's as simple as that, Walter. He is one now of a cluster of people who have disappeared, never to be seen again. One of the people is a woman called Monica Razor, who worked in the same laboratory that General Neil McCasland oversaw. And her disappearance is mind-boggling. She was on a hike with friends. They were about 50 feet in front of her. They turned, looked at her coming up over a ridge. There was nowhere for her to hide, nowhere for her body to disappear to. When they turned, she'd waved and said she was okay. When they turned a few seconds later, she had quite literally disappeared. There's been a massive search, never been found, and so also has the Major General never been found. It's a story we broke with you here on the show with the Midnight Misfits, and it's been followed up assiduously by, finally, lots of the legacy media, Fox News, CNN. I don't think the New York Times has scratched its tummy yet to acknowledge the story, but frankly, at some stage in the next millennium, they might wake up to its significance. This is a Major General, Walter, who, as I've told you before, was heavily involved in an attempt 10 years ago to declassify UFO secrets. His disappearance follows just a few weeks on from when President Trump announced he was going to declassify and make transparent all the UFO UAP secrets. So his disappearance is still a mystery. There is absolutely no new information other than the fact that his wife was quoted in a phone call to police. In the phone call, she said that her husband had disappeared in unusual circumstances, that he'd left the house without taking his phone. And she suggested, the implication behind her call to police is that he may not want to be found. So there's a strong pointer that some people are trying to suggest that the general was suicidal, which I'm sorry to say, I do not think was the case at all. I have good reason to believe that General Neil McCasland was not in any way suicidal. And I do believe we now have to openly speculate that his disappearance involves foul play. And to me, it's incredible that the government has not made any official statement at all, apart from local police denying foul play. How could it possibly be the case that there is no foul play when one of the most senior retired generals in the United States military, with some of the most sensitive secrets in his head, has disappeared without explanation in extraordinary circumstances from his home in Albuquerque, New Mexico?
Ross Coulthard, senior journalist for News Nation, based live in Sydney, Australia. A live report from Ross Coulthard. When do we see you on News Nation?
You'll be seeing me. I've got a scoop coming up, Walter, and I'll tell you about it next time we speak, all about Amelia Earhart. And if people go to YouTube, type in Reality Check, Ross Coulthard, C-O-U-L-T-H-A-R-T, they can watch all of the nearly 200 shows that we've done.
6:50, look at this. Did I just say that? 4:15 in the morning. 4:15 in the morning with Walter Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Networks. Another Side of Midnight at 800-848-9222. John, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Hi, John.
Scientific things are developing all the time. For people who have type 1 diabetes, there's the Isle of Langerhans that didn't work. Stem cells create improved activity of the Isles of Langerhans. There's a test for of finding cancer, a blood test that finds cancer in 57 different parts of your body at very early stages. In your situation with the child, if you were to look into hyperbaric pressure units, which create stem cells, that is very, but it creates neural pathways in your brain. If you will just look at hyperbaric pressure unit, the child may well be able to live at a higher level. I hope you are successful. Hyperbaric pressure.
What are you talking about?
Hyperbaric pressure itself is...
I know what that is. I know what it is, but what's it have to do with my kid?
It will create new neural pathways. It'll create a better mind. Her mind is going to be able to operate at a higher function. I'm not saying how much it'll improve, but the those who support hyperbaric pressure include that. That's one of the first things.
I'm supposed to put her in an oxygen tube at the age of 14 and leave her in there for how long?
A session is approximately an hour.
And if you have a 14-year-old daughter, you're going to put her in an MRI for an hour? I'm going to put her in a hyperbaric chamber for an hour? How do you think that's going to go? Do you have kids?
Okay, these chambers are as big as 12 to 24 people. You can be right in there with her.
There's a party. Now, listen, do you have kids? Have you done this?
No, I apologize. I don't have any children.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, but we need to go backwards. The reason you're saying it is that my daughter has autism, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you didn't start that way. You were just throwing my child into a hyperbaric chamber. Okay. But it's a very sweet thought, and I appreciate it, John. I really do. Yeah, in Tennessee. Yeah. Thank you very much for the call. Stan, welcome to Another Side of Midnight with Walter M. Sterling at 800-848-9222. It's a live radio show, and that means right now you are the media.
Hello, Walter. Pleased to speak with you and enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
You were speaking about music and songs that you remember and maybe can't get out of your mind.
Exactly. And here's one. And I thought that the least I could do is put them into your mind, and now you can't get them out of your mind.
Well, if I think of this one, which is really a great piece of music, it's the Odd Couple theme from the TV show.
Yes.
By Neil Hefti, the great composer. And I just thought I'd suggest that as a...
No, that's exactly. Stan, you're a good listener. You're a good Midnight Misfit. The reason I said it was I said there are songs that once we get them in our head, we can't get them out of our head. There's another group of songs, Stan, that I'll play another night, which is songs that make me want to smoke a cigarette. And that's particularly odd. These are often by Frank Sinatra, songs that make me want to smoke a cigarette. And what's weird is I never smoked cigarettes.
Right.
No, I never smoked, but I really want a cigarette when I hear I've Got You Under My Skin by Frank Sinatra. Every time I hear that, I'm like, I want a cigarette. Do you understand that, Stan?
I understand very well. I'm a musician. I'm a violinist, and I played with Frank Sinatra.
How did that go? Was he angry?
No, he was great. It was wonderful. I was in the orchestra, and he was performing. And
who was the leader of your orchestra, Stan?
Who was the contractor?
Yeah, who was leading the orchestra?
The music leader, let's see, the great pianist, Vincent Falcone, the pianist, one of the great musicians. I worked with him back in the day in the 80s. Or Bill Miller was a conductor at times, and
But Stan, you understand the key premise, which is that there are songs that make us want to smoke, and there are songs that make us go crazy because we can't get them out of our head. Stan, thank you very much for listening to Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Networks. Walter Sterling, it is 4:20 in the morning, 4:20 in the morning at 800 848-9222.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
Red Apple Audio Networks, do you know what? I find apps to be annoying and complicated, difficult to use, difficult to understand. They take up a lot of room on my phone, except the Red Apple Audio Networks app. When I first saw this, I'm like, this is such a good app. It is simple, and it features minicasts. If there's a part of the show that you liked, want to share with a friend, good idea. If you want to share the Cats Roundtable, which comes on this morning, with all of your friends later in the day because it's a little early, you can hear the Cats Roundtable over and over again whenever you want. And you can hear this pieces of this show whenever you want, too. The Red Apple Audio Networks, the app, but what I like about the app, it's elegant. It's easy to understand. You don't need a 14-year-old to explain it to you. Some of the apps are way too complicated. You know what other app I like, I urge you to get, is the Mr. Frosty app. What? Yeah, the Mr. Frosty app shows you where a Mr. Frosty truck is near you, and then you click on it, and it tells you the name of the driver and how long he's been driving. Kenny, welcome to Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Hi, Kenny. Welcome to the big show.
Okay, hi, Walter. Your show is terrific at night.
Oh, thanks.
And
thanks.
I always thought the Mr. Salty Truck played that music, you know, like the Oscar Mayer Wienermann, and just got into your head. You knew he was around somewhere, you know. The thing is with music, I think YouTube helps people who really don't have any musical connections, but they can go on a YouTube channel, their own or anybody else's, and spread their music, and it can get out there. So I think there's much more opportunities today. A lot of people use the technology. We know they're not using instruments and stuff, but the music is played. So I say so big deal. It's entertaining. A lot of concerts, I mean, years ago, I think in your age group, the concerts were wild, especially the rock concerts back then. The kids had a fun time. You really would go crazy with some of those concerts, and it was just an all-around good night, good feeling. They used to give out the rock stations. People don't know there was a lot of rock stations back there. Back then, they give out the stickers. And they stopped giving out the stickers when about five of them ended up on Mayor Koch's car, his official car for this mayor of New York. The thing is, also, I just want to emphasize, I know a lot of things, but why don't you start a GoFundMe? You can do it for your daughter. Get her the best people out there to help her, to teach her, you know, if she's missing out or anything. And that's the way to don't swallow your pride. Don't say you can't do it. You can do a GoFundMe, and there's billionaires in this audience that would contribute, and I think that would help you out. Don't be embarrassed. Swallow your pride and go for it. You know, you're helping your kids out. That's the most important thing out there. And I just like to say one more thing. I was at a Grand Funk Railroad concert, and TJ was there. What the heck was he doing? He's supposed to be doing the show, you know? Where is TJ?
What? TJ Lubinsky, the host of the PBS concerts, that TJ?
On WABC, the biggest all-night show on American radio.
Thanks for your call. John, welcome to Another Side of Midnight at 800-848-9222. Hi, John.
Good morning, Walter.
Sir.
Walter, one thing I wanted to point out is you were talking about Iran. You said all they have is the Strait of Hormuz card to play with. What they're trying to do by not coming to a peace agreement is take advantage of the fact that they have come into possession of very brand new high-tech shoulder-fired missiles. That's how they got the F-15, how they got the A-Warthog, and they also got a F-18 F-18 Hornet last week that was able to escape to Kuwait. what Iran is hoping to do is to have a good day and maybe capture two POWs. And that would be two more cards to play. That is why they wouldn't come to a peace agreement. They're going to take their chances with their new Chinese technology.
All right. It's very important for you to call TJ, to call Vice President Vance. Call him as soon as possible. Give him this information. Thank you very much for the call. 800-848-9222. Pam, you're on another side of midnight. Hi, Pam. Hi, Pam.
Good morning. Good morning. They should have used that ghost murmur to find Nancy Guthrie.
Say that again.
They should have used the ghost murmur technique to find Nancy Guthrie.
What is the ghost murmur technique?
It uses magnetic pulse from the heart.
Oh, you're talking about the military operation, the military weapon, right?
Right, which can detect heartbeat 40 miles away.
Oh, we can. Yes. That Ross Coulthart talked about. My hunch is you probably need to know what the heartbeat sounds like already. You probably need to know the person's heartbeat. You probably need to have a lot of other things under your control before you can randomly search for it. But
they have records on her because she had a heart condition, so they had EKGs all over the place. Plus,
and
she had the
pacemaker.
Right.
But I think that story is much squirrelier than you and I know, Pam. I think that story is so full of holes and so full of nonsense that we can't imagine what the truth is going to be when it comes out. That is one of the great mysteries of our time. Imagine the focus and the money on that poor old woman. What happened to her? Imagine the focus on money, and we've come up with nothing. And the first thing that sheriff said was, it's going to take a long time to find her. What kind of statement is that? That was the first thing that guy said. Well, it's going to be, you know, it's going to take a long time to find her. Pam, I appreciate your thoughts. And I can't believe how they have not found that woman. Thank you very much for the call, Pam. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Ira in Jersey, welcome to Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Hi.
Good morning, Walter. I just want to pay you a big compliment. You are just great. You know, I had been listening to talk radio for a long time, but for some reason, some of the broadcasters, I don't know, I could tell from sound. I am blind. And for some reason, I could tell from the sound of some of the broadcasters, it seems like some of them are not like, no way the way that you are. You are just a down-home person. You actually are. And you actually tell things like it is. You know, I also wanted to point out something to you.
Here it comes.
That your daughter is extremely bright. I just wanted to point this out to you, that being a blind person, I know what that's all about. Because as a child, being blind, I was always made fun of and, you know, cussed out in the schools. And I had one or two people that were very compassionate people. But, you know, and even nowadays, people, I find that people look at blind people as like, I kind of feel sometimes, Walter, I know it's not true a lot of times, but I feel sometimes in some ways that I'm a second class person. You know, you go into restaurants and the waiter or the waitress kind of talks at you in a certain sound. You know, not that they're not nice people. I just feel sometimes, Walter, that sometimes that we don't know how to address people that are disabled. Do you agree?
Ira, I have a question for you and two quick stories. Which high school did you go to?
Mattawan.
Mattawan High.
Yes.
All right. Now, part of the reason that I empathize with you, and I think you and I can have a conversation, and you were very complimentary to me, and I thank you. Peter Reed. Peter Reed was a friend of mine from the time of I was five until we graduated from Columbia High School in Maplewood, New Jersey. But during that time, Peter Reed went blind. I had a good friend who went from sighted to blind. And he had a very gifted mother, and his mother did everything she could to get him all the support he needed. And later, he heard me on the radio years later, and he called me, and I said, well, what happened after high school? How was your life? And he told me something I didn't expect. He said, oh, I had a great life. I worked for the Social Security Administration for 30 years. I had been given every advantage in the public schools because my mom made sure I had every advantage I possibly could get. And he had and has a happy life. And I got to see the example of how to do it and how to be a friend to someone who is blind. And I have tremendous respect for what you have to go through, just tremendous respect. The other thing I have to tell you is there's a career for you in radio, because the best programmers I've ever known, radio programmers, are blind because they hear better. And blind people hear better and give the best critiques, the most thoughtful critiques. And the fact that you would call the show and listen to the show at all, I'm grateful, Ira. Thank you very much for listening.
You are great. Well, I'm serious. You know, at some point, I don't know if it could be done. I would love to really meet you.
Well, yeah, if you're buying.
You're fantastic. I'm serious. You're great.
Ira, thank you. If you're buying, we can meet. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. At 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. You and I are on WGN in Chicago, a giant radio station. Grateful for the affiliation. Abraham, aren't you grateful to be on WGN?
Florida, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Florida. I'd give the world to be shoplifting at the Piggly Wiggly swamps. Alligators, flying roaches, HOAs, iguanas falling from the trees. The folks up north will laugh uproariously when they hear Florida stories. On another side of midnight.
We have a husband and wife who got together a while back. They got married in Connecticut around 2003, and she is of Puerto Rican heritage, and I don't know if that contributes to how fiery she is, but she became so abusive that at some point he had to move out of the house that he himself was living in. He was able to get a divorce. They split up. Since she can't support herself, she had to go back and stay with some family in Puerto Rico. Well, they had rekindled their romance, and they were going to give it another try. They meet up in Florida. They're headed back to Connecticut to try and resume their married life. But they get in an argument in Clearwater, Florida. And at some point, there's a lot of alcohol involved. She beats him with a toy, with an adult toy. And so he has to, and it doesn't say where she hit him. That's up to your imagination. But the cops get there, and he tells them, yeah, we have a history. She's done this before. They can see her priors. She, of course, is ragingly drunk. They have a hard time communicating with her. And eventually, she did admit to using the toy on him. I mean, not just, she hit him with it.
Wait. Hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
We have a Florida man, 29 years old, a Florida woman, 53 years old. And they're over at the bus stop in front of a Wendy's restaurant adjacent to U.S. Highway 19, and they're caught doing what's called an unnatural act. Now, I don't know what that means, an unnatural act, because it sounds like it's probably something sexual, but isn't sex natural? And I didn't go to law school. However, I don't want to dig too further in this one, because when you look in the mugshots, I'm having a hard time telling which one's which. I mean, they both kind of look like the dude, so maybe we're just better off not knowing what an unnatural act is. In the eyes of the Florida law, please God, next story.
Wait, hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
Well, for our next Florida story, we're going to go to the Botanica Day Spa in Clearwater, where a Florida man goes in to get a massage. And, you know, I don't know how people know which day spa is the right day spa or which massage parlor is the right massage parlor. But apparently this is one of the ones that gives a little extra service. So the guy at the end of the massage, he gets flipped over and the masseuse kind of brushes up against it. And he's like, oh, okay. I'm sure that was an accident. And then that kind of, it feels like a mouth. Well, I don't mean to ruin what would otherwise be an interesting, maybe even fun story, but it turns out the masseuse problem is a dude. That's not what I was expecting either. There's a lot of fellas who'd probably be okay with that. This guy wasn't. So he jumps up, actually runs out of the massage parlor to his car naked. Calls cops and they come and arrest the guy. He's like, oh, look, I thought I was doing him a favor. I was just trying to earn a tip. I don't know. Get me out of here.
Wait, Hold my beer.
Now, here we are in the same episode. We have another public sex story. This one's down in Key West. And, you know, you hear about how freaky Key West is because they got all the creepy middle-aged swingers going there. But even in Key West, you're not allowed to do it on a public sidewalk. However, there are a couple of interesting variables in this version of the story. The woman is 38, the man's 41, and she looks all right. You've definitely done worse than that. I've certainly have done worse than that. I'm impressed at the time. 4:20 in the morning. And that's not like a weed thing.
Smoke weed every day.
But to still have that kind of game, that kind of scene control, have her interest, still have her be awake and alive and attuned and turned on at 4:20 in the morning. I just assume there has to be drugs involved.
Wait, Hold my beer.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story.
Walter Sterling, 800-848-9222 with Mark. On Another Side of Midnight. Hello, Mark.
I was hoping you wouldn't come to me after that. That was some good stuff. I was telling my wife.
It will be back, Mark.
After paying the taxes for the state and local, I want to go somewhere else, so maybe I'll stay out of Florida. I just thanks for that interlude there, the comedy, because I wanted to talk about one. It's just very difficult to listen to your show, but I haven't called in a while, so I hope all is well. With everybody that's listening. I did want to call about the scientists leaving, but just really quick, you know, you mentioned, I was talking to my wife about the Guthrie story, and I'm like, you know, we spend all of the energy, all that time, and it's just anecdotal. It's just something, you know, you pull out of the sky. But did you see this absolute creep for the FedEx driver that killed a little girl? Did you see that story? If you didn't, there's a camera, in-facing camera in the FedEx truck. I think he had a little bit of an accident and he hit the girl and somehow he got her in the van. I guess he just enticed her that, oh, I'm going to take you to the hospital. I'm going to take you home. And there's this like grayish picture, you know, from the, you know, it's backlit, whatever, from the in-truck camera. And, you know, you see the girl and I'm like, she's like 7 years old. She's probably thinking, oh, this man's going to help me. And he ended up strangling her. I'm like, what is the matter with people, man? I mean, you know, when I retired from my official job, I'm still bouncing around. That's why I'm up early. I call you. But I drove a school bus for a little while, and I would do nothing but protect my kids. What kind of animal? And this story didn't get a lot of.
Where did it happen, Mark?
I don't even remember. You can just Google up, hey, a FedEx driver that killed a little girl, and you see the photo. She's like leaning on her against the partition door in the truck, and he was captured. You know, I just started crying. I'm like, man, what? I work with kids, man, and I've either been blessed or cursed because I've never had children. So you take that either way. But I'm like, and like I said, it's just horrible, man. Why would you do something like that?
So, I'll tell you why you would do something like that, Mark. You want to know why? You want the answer? You know the answer. because there are people who are struck by Satan. There are people who are the scum of the earth. There are people who should not be allowed to walk. There are people who have been let out of jail dozens of times when they weren't supposed to be let out of jail. There are people who came here illegal that are not citizens. There are people who have been raised by pigs and animals who used to beat the crap out of them when they were kids, and they don't know how to behave. The fact that that guy could hold it together long enough to have a job for 3 days. I wonder how long he worked for FedEx. My hunch is he probably was hired by FedEx 2 weeks ago. Have we heard trouble with FedEx drivers in the past? No, I suspect FedEx has a good screening process. I suspect FedEx is a careful employer. Things happen. But the reason anybody would do that is that they are animals, they are pigs, they are struck by Satan. I hope he never, ever, ever gets out of jail. And my broad stroke opinion on this, Mark, is anybody who abuses a child in any way never gets out of jail. Let their cellmates take care of them. And I thank you for the call, Mark, at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Joel, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Hi.
Hey, good morning, Mrs. Sterling. Joel from 29 Palms, California.
Are you at Coachella? Have you gone to Coachella?
No, sir. I was stationed here about 30 years ago, and I'm still here. And,
you couldn't afford a bus?
Nah, I'm not crazy about Coachella.
But I mean, you couldn't afford a bus and got out of there after you were stationed there. What do you do? I don't mean what you do for a living. I mean, what do you do there? There's nothing there.
Oh no, I'm retired. I retired Marine Corps and retired Marine Corps civilian services, and I just live out here.
let's stop a second about the Marine thing. That's the real military. Every Marine guy I know, they look at each other like deep and profound fraternal brothers. That's a tremendous amount of dedication to get through basic as a Marine.
Yes, sir.
Now, why did you call me? Since you're a Marine and you have skills, why would you call this show?
The reason I'm calling, sir, I heard the show about 40 minutes ago when you spoke about your daughter talking about the poem about the rain. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
What she said.
My daughter was.
When she said the rain reminds her of the devil and the angels.
Yep.
I lost the love of my life back in October, and she had a similar saying. And I'm so sorry.
You're fine. Joel, you're fine. You sound like a human being.
I wanted to write it down, but I couldn't. I was wondering if you could repeat it.
Joel, that's very sweet, and I'll tell you exactly what my Samantha said. One morning, we opened the door. It was raining. I reacted like an adult, and I said, "Oh, it's raining." And she said, "Well, I like the rain." I said, "Why do you like the rain, Samantha?" "Because it smells like devils and angels." That's what Samantha said.
You have no idea how much that had an impact on me. I'm so sorry, sir.
You have nothing to be sorry about. I am flattered. I will tell Samantha you said this. I'll play it for her. It's very sweet. You will make her day as you have made mine. Joel, thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. You have made my night. Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Thank you very much. Let's see. We got Tom in Jersey. Tom, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Tom in Jersey, how you doing?
Good morning, Will. All right, good morning. Okay. I want to tell you something about autism and diabetes. You know, there's countries outside of the United States that have never heard of autism or diabetes. So there's that. And then there's another thing that I want to mention. Many years ago on Channel 13, I was watching a program about this woman. She had a son that had Down syndrome. And in her kitchen, she developed some kind of formula and she was giving it to her son and he was getting a lot better. So she thought, I'm going to bring this out into the world. And whoever she introduced it to was somebody high in the public field. But anyway, the point is they knocked it down. They didn't want that in.
Well, Tom,
you know, and tell me what is wrong with this picture when we are supposed to be the greatest country in the world?
And well, here's the headline. This is the greatest country in the world. Where in Jersey are you, Tom?
Bayonne.
Bayonne, of course. So you know about pizza. Now, listen, here's the deal with the endless mythology of people go to the big pharmaceutical companies. Here's a solution. Here's how to cure cancer. Here's how you boil baking soda and everything.
Those things are already been cured already. Those things have been taken care of.
Right. The
little guy just don't know about it.
We know about it. You and I know about it, Tom. You and I know that if you have a gazillion-dollar company and you come there with baking soda and apple cider vinegar and you say this is going to solve the problems, and it does, well, then they have a real problem. You and I understand that, Tom. And we're from Jersey. We know how things really work, don't we, Tom?
Yes.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the call because anybody who can put up with those tolls and that traffic going down the shore, we can put up with anything. Tom, thank you very much for the call. It's 50 minutes past the hour. Jake Novak coming up in just seconds with his top 5 at 5 with Walter Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
All right, 51 past the hour, 52 past the hour, Red Apple Audio Networks. Walter Sterling, you and I can communicate by email, as primitive as that may sound, walter.sterling@wabcradio.com. walter.sterling@wabcradio.com. Much to the shock of my mother and my wife, I will be with you tomorrow night in this time from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. tomorrow night on the Red Apple Audio Networks. Jake Novak, top 5 at 5. That was major breaking news tonight.
Yeah. You know, I mean, these peace talks not working out. I knew this was going to happen, though. You know, obviously the news broke overnight, early in the morning, but when those U.S. naval destroyers went through the Strait of Hormuz yesterday afternoon, I knew there wasn't going to be anything happening in these peace talks because that was the last card that Iran had left to play. You know, just the harassment of traffic through the strait. They can still try, but the fact that they didn't even shoot at those U.S. naval vessels when they had threatened to do anything about it, and the fact that we can go through there with impunity, I don't see what the U.S. needs to give up to Iran now. And there you go. I mean, I think maybe they were waiting to see if Iran was able to hit those ships. They weren't. And then whatever demands Iran had weren't really worth listening to.
What do you think Israel is thinking right now or planning to do?
Well, Israel's been there's been worry in Israel among the citizenry. I can't really speak to what the prime minister's office has been thinking about. The citizens, when the ceasefire were very worried. They were worried that this would have come for nothing because Israel's been pounded by a lot of Iranian missiles. Although, and again, I don't want to jinx it. Last couple of days, we haven't seen any Iranian missile attacks into Israel. And that's maybe because of the ceasefire, maybe because their capabilities to do so are reduced. But they've been worried about it. But at the same time, Israel didn't stop their slamming of Hezbollah during that period. And that made the Israelis feel much more confident about things. And I got to tell you, Walter, this is one of the things that maybe will be studied forever. It'll be one of those things that they put on the military channel, or that the cable channels where they look at military things. This attack that Israel carried out against Hezbollah Wednesday night going into Thursday, 100 aircraft in 10 minutes hitting a 170 kilometer square area, simultaneously hitting all these targets. And simultaneous aspect of it is very important because no one had a chance to warn somebody else, hey, the Israelis are coming. Simultaneously knocking out dozens and dozens of Hezbollah strongholds. It was a massive, massive attack, all happening after the so-called ceasefire went into effect. Now, it never included Israel and Hezbollah, but that's what the Iranians wanted. So that to me is going to be one of those things we study for a long time. I don't think there's ever been that much of a simultaneous air attack on multiple targets ever before in history. And of course, the mainstream media won't report that, mostly because they don't understand military. I mean, there's not a lot of veterans in the mainstream media at all. And I'm not one either. But I grew up in a military town, Norfolk, Virginia, and I at least know whom to ask.
Now, could you sum up again, what was Tehran's response to J.D. Vance? What did J.D. Vance offer as far as what we know? And what was the response where we just walked away? It's hard for me to understand how we just walked away and just didn't look at them and say, really? You don't want you don't want these terms? You don't agree to it? Okay, start bombing again.
Yeah, well, both sides are blaming each other, Iran, so that's not surprising. But the official, and I think this is actually true, the official wording from J.D. Vance is Iran would not accept staying behind these red lines that the United States has set for them. And we've always known what those red lines are. No nuclear program. Stop with, no more enrichment of uranium. No missile program. And no attacking traffic through the Strait of Hormuz. And these Iranian radicals are never going to accept any of those terms, even though, Iran has a lot of resources. The United States probably, if Iran for some period of time accepted those terms, might have unfrozen some of their assets. My point is, this new regime, these new leaders who probably haven't had the kind of wealth and power that the guys who have been eliminated have enjoyed for years, they could have a pretty nice life if they would just accept these terms. Wouldn't cost them anything. Quite the contrary. It would be a huge boost for them personally. They won't take it, which just goes to show how incredibly suicidal these people are. These are religious fanatics and very much the descendants of the Nazis, who not coincidentally were the major influence on the life of the original Ayatollah Khomeini, who was a huge fan of the Nazis, listened to their broadcasts regularly. That's why they act so much like them. And reminds me of Hitler. His last act before he committed suicide was to order the flooding of the tunnels in Berlin, the subway tunnels in Berlin, where the people were hiding out, because he said, if I'm going to go down, I want all the people to go down. And that's what these people are like, because they're the descendants of these people. It's not a coincidence.
Rarely do we hear the phrase they want to be like the Nazis. We rarely hear that phrase on American broadcasting. But what also I'm learning today from these events is that although we have been given the impression we've had a military victory against Iran, we apparently have not had a military victory against Iran, or else we would not be sitting down and negotiating with them. I also was under the impression that we had wiped out their government. Apparently we've not wiped out their government. They still have the ability to negotiate about things like enriched uranium. Well, that's a fairly high-level task. I wonder how much of a hole we have made into that country. I don't think we're getting the straight answer on that.
Well, we do know that Iran still has missile launchers. We know they have a lot of missiles. The problem is they are running out of the ability to continue to shoot them without being immediately detected and then destroyed heavily. The last couple of bombing runs that the U.S. did before the ceasefire went into a place were massive. So, yes, they still have some weapons. Yes, they still can cause problems. But their ability to continue to do that, I think, is much, much reduced. And right now, the question is, was the United States basically telling them, hey, we've got you surrounded. We're going to give you a chance to walk away from this, because the risk to us are things like what happened with that F-15. They finally shot down an F-15, thanks greatly to some new radar that either the Chinese, the Russians, or both of them gave Iran. And we don't want that to happen because of the bad PR, but that doesn't mean we're not winning 126-1.
You and I will talk again tomorrow. Jake Novak, the top five at five on the Red Apple Audio Networks. Another Side of Midnight. Have a great day. Bye.